The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 15th of January, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Andrew Pollaert, Chief Executive Officer of Vast Resources, VAST. It's a ticker there. And Andrew explains the letter to investors, which was released today ahead of their general meeting. Also on the podcast, Dr. Clifford Gross, Chairman at Tech Capital, TEK, was a ticker there. And Cliff discusses development at Guidant, one of their portfolio companies which seeks to commercialise technology to augment autonomous vehicles. Also on the podcast, Hayden Locke, Chief Executive Officer of Emerson, EML. And Hayden talks through some of the key work streams and news flow expected for the company in 2019. Plus, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about the following companies: Tertiary Minerals, Grand Vision Media Holdings, and EnQuest Corporate Bonds. And as always, I have two lists: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to keep up to date with all the companies in your portfolio? On the free Vox Markets app, you can create multiple watch lists and get instant news alerts about any company you follow. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andrew Pollaert, Chief Executive Officer of Vast Resources, VAST. Andrew, thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you, Justin. Happy New Year.
Yeah, you too. And you've started the new year here with a letter to shareholders, a notice of general meeting, and we'll get into that in a bit from the chairman there, that is. Before we do, as always, Andrew, if someone's listening right now and not familiar with your company, just summarise it for them if you could.
Yeah, Vast Resources is a multi-commodity, multi-jurisdictional junior mining company. We have operations in gold in Zimbabwe, producing around 40, 50 kilos a month of gold, with other assets coming on stream, as well as also potentially diamonds this year. And in Romania, we have the Manaila polymetallic mine. And during the course of the first half of this year too, we'll be opening the Baita polymetallic mine, which is something we've been chasing for a very long time, with other exploration activities also proceeding as planned. So very exciting times for Vast.
Yeah, okay. So we've got this RNS out today, and it says the purpose of the chairman's letter, it was to seek through the passing of resolutions at the general meeting the approval to grant the directors authority to issue new equity share capital up to specific limits and to disapply statutory preemption rights. So explain this for people not familiar, or I can see the share price taking a little bit of a dip today, and you've had a few inquiries coming inbound. So explain what's happening here.
Yeah, inquiries is a few inquiries is an understatement. One thing that's very important for shareholders to understand is the purpose for why we've asked for this headroom. The company has historically been engaged in some funding deals that were not exactly the right thing for shareholders, and it cost heavy dilution. And what's being misunderstood, I believe, today is that the primary resolution that's being sought, which is Resolution 1 and 2 in the Chairman's letter, the first paragraph, is the request for headroom for the diamonds in Zimbabwe. We are still very confident that we'll be allocated the right to mine at the heritage claim in Zimbabwe. Nothing has changed. In fact, you know, we are anticipating getting confirmation very shortly. And in order for us to stop the loss of equity in the diamonds, as we did in our Pixton Peerless mine last year or the year before, where we had spent almost $30 million in investing in Pixton Peerless exploration, and then we sold virtually 75% for, I think it was in total, $8 to $12 million. And now we're sitting there as being marginalised. To avoid that happening, what we've asked the shareholders for today is the right to issue shares for the purpose of securing a debt facility to allow us to implement the diamond mine once we receive approval from the Zimbabwean government. We are still confident that we're going to be proceeding with that shortly. And we don't want to be in a position where, you know, you're waiting months and months and months on end, which is historically in both Romania and Zimbabwe, for an approval that you're confident you're going to obtain. And then you don't have the ability to fund it. So what this is a preemptive move based on a fairly confident reality that we will be granted the right to mine the diamonds together with the Heritage Trust, and not be in a position to fund the production. Mm-hmm. So, and what happens normally is, you know, they take months and months and months to grant you the authority to mine, and then they expect you to start the next day. Mm-hmm. This is for us, we are now in discussion with several funders. We cannot provide security over the tenure because it's a joint venture with the community trust. So therefore, we need to provide some sort of security to borrow, you know, whether somewhere in the vicinity of $10 million to implement the production process, which we know from our geologists, or we're confident from our geologists, that we'll be able to repay itself off in a very short period of time. So, you know, 2-3 months of production will repay the capital investment into the mine itself, and then allow us to grow and expand. But as I said, to enable us to do so, we need to have some form of security. And though that headroom being sought in Resolution 1 and 2 is for the collateral security to enable us to implement a debt package. So we avoid dilution. Otherwise, we'll be forced to have to bring in an equity partner, and we'll again be diluted in our own asset, which is something we just do not want to see happening in the future.
Yeah, and so, I mean, and that's the worries again. What's the main worry, the main inquiry is what? What are people saying to you?
Well, people think that we're diluting, you know, 50-60% of the current headroom, you know, the current shares on issue to implement the diamond policy. Now, that's not the case. The case is to use it as collateral security to enable us to obtain debt funding to do so. Mm-hmm. And that's something that needs to be understood by shareholders. This is a positive, not a negative.
Yeah.
For the shareholders. It's to stop, I mean, because it is such a lucrative business, we don't want to be giving it away for nothing, as we have done so in the past.
Yeah.
And that's the primary reason. The second resolution is purely, it was announced back in December when we took that bridging loan from Bergen. We're obliged to do this second resolution by the 31st of January, and we're fulfilling our obligations under that contract. That also relates back to the tranche 2 of Mercuria, which we have fulfilled all of our due diligence obligations, and we are awaiting, we are still of the belief that Mercuria will proceed with tranche 2 of the funding arrangement, and it's just a matter of our ability to announce officially the date of drawdown. If not, as I said previously, we do have other off-takers who are willing to step in and take over, but we don't believe that's necessary at this point in time. If we were told that we will not be proceeding with tranche 2 from Mercuria, we would be obliged to announce that to the market. So as long as there's no news, it's good news.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, so generally you are very happy with the progress of the company, and it's going in the right direction, yeah?
Yes, I mean, it was unfortunate timing that this came out today. Mm-hmm. We hope and we look forward to announcing, the selection in Zimbabwe of the diamond fields. And once that's done, I think people will see it in a different light. Yeah. And the third resolution on Baita is to ask for general working capital, is because as part of the, you know, it's quite ironic that part of the last due diligence, which we weren't expecting from Mercuria, together with the external technical consultants, has shown us that we can actually accelerate the full production of Baita. But that will all be laid out in a new presentation and a new website that will be hopefully operational by the end of this month. We'll also be providing the timelines and some updated photos of the work that's being carried on at Baita at the moment. And that will allow us to virtually double our original work program that was anticipated for Baita. It's a small cost to bring accelerated production, which will allow us to generate cash flow for the company, free cash for the company, a lot sooner, to avoid any sort of funding requirements in the future. So between Baita and the diamonds, the company should be producing free cash by the middle of this year. And that is why we are doing what we're doing. We're not doing this to raise money to pay salaries or or for working capital and general overhead. This is specifically to advance the company's profitability and nothing more. And hopefully shareholders will understand that we have not entered into these arrangements for any other reason but the benefit of shareholders.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, as if to summarise, Andrew, give someone now, if they're listening, who are not following the company, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, as I said earlier, Vast is a multi-jurisdictional, multi-commodity mining company, that has two mines in production at the moment and will have four mines in production by the middle of this year. It's a very exciting time for Vast. We believe we're highly undervalued and there's a lot of upside potential for shareholders. And I think that anybody who sees the statistics of the company will see that we are definitely heading towards that mid-tier mining company that everybody has been questioning over the course of the last few months. And we believe we're going to get there a lot sooner than people anticipate.
Marvellous stuff. Andrew, good to chat to you, and no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dr. Clifford Gross, Chairman at Tech Capital. TEK is the ticker there. Cliff, thanks for joining me.
That's a pleasure, Justin. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, yes. And you've had some decent news out on Guidant, one of the companies investing in here. And so we'll get into that in a bit. Before we do, as always, it's not, you know, all your many different moving parts of Tech Capital. Can you just summarise quickly, Cliff? I know it's hard to summarise it quickly. There's a lot going on there. But tell us what Tech Capital is all about, please.
Sure. Tech Capital creates value by investing in university discoveries. And we have a growing business where we search the universities of the world. It's about 4,500 of them in our network. And we find the most compelling technologies. We subject them to very detailed due diligence and screening. And when we feel that we have found one that's worth the carriage, we'll set up a portfolio company and seek to commercialize it. Mm-hmm. So we've established a number of vibrant portfolio companies, four of them, we feel are really long for the sport. Belloscura, which is a medical device company that has a compelling new set of technologies for developing what we believe to be the world's leading portable oxygen concentrator. Lucid, which is an eyewear tech company that has launched a online eye store or online e-shop to sell eyeglasses, and it has the first prescription-ready audio glasses where you could listen to music, answer your phone, talk to Siri with a proper pair of prescription designer glasses. And that business is going very well. And then we also have Solaris, which is Latin for salt, which is a business to provide salt substitutes that are all natural, that reduce the sodium that people consume, which is a contributor to hypertension and heart disease, but still give you all the flavor of natural salt that people enjoy. And finally, Guidant, which is a new company. We established it last year. It has a compelling intellectual property that allows us to commercialize the control of autonomous vehicles, allows you to control those vehicles with a watch, a smartwatch, a smartphone, or your desktop. You can dispatch the vehicles to have them get a charge, park themselves, retrieve them to come pick you up, or join an Uber-like pool and earn money for you while you're hard at work yourself. So those four companies, there are others, but those four companies are really going, in our opinion, gangbusters. And they make up the lion's share of the value of Tech Capital. And on top of that, the very services that we use to find and screen these compelling properties, we also provide to universities and companies around the world. Mm-hmm. And that does two things. Keeps us close to the global suppliers of university discoveries, and it also helps reduce our operating expenses. Right now, those services cover around 40% of our operating expenses. And it's a growing part of the business. So that's what Tech Capital does.
Yeah, well, let's talk about Guidant, like you say there. It's sort of very sort of future-proof technology here. So you've appointed a director, Daniel Grossman. Take us through, what's happening with Daniel, where's he come from, and why he'll be an asset to the company, Cliff.
Well, Daniel is a remarkable gentleman, without overstatement. He is joined as a director of Guidant. He most recently served as the CEO of Chariot. Previously, he helped create General Motors' mobility division called Maven and led all of the operations as COO. And prior to that, he was vice president of Zipcar, where he helped pioneer the brand globally. As you probably remember, Zipcar was acquired by Avis / Budget for around $500 million a few years back. So Daniel is a proven executive that has delivered innovation and leadership in a variety of companies, and he's perfect in our mind to join the Guidant board. But also, Guidant has some other really renowned individuals. On October 2nd of 2018, we announced that Harold Braun was hired as chairman of Guidant. Harold is no lightweight. He was CEO of Siemens Network USA, a New York Stock Exchange company, and Aviat Networks, a NASDAQ company. And he served as the senior executive of Nokia Siemens Network North America. So he's, you know, exquisitely well-positioned to be the chairman of the company because Guidant is really delivering a network solution for autonomous vehicles. And on the 6th of December, we were really delighted to announce that Guidant had added Johan Denisian as a director. Johan, last year, was executive vice president of General Motors and president of the Cadillac Motor Division. Prior to that, he was president of Infinity Motor Company, and prior to that, president of Audi of America, and then Audi of Japan. So you really can't imagine having a director with more senior management experience, because he's actually run the lion's share of the leading automotive companies in the world. So between Harold Braun and Johan Denisian and Daniel Grossman, we have, without overstatement, an A-team at the helm of Guidant.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems, I mean, at the moment we are hearing more and more stories about autonomous vehicles and they're being widely tested everywhere. Now, your tech there, how far off? I mean, it seems quite, you know, like I said, almost in the future and preparing for the future. But how far away do you think it is from, you know, actual commerciality?
Well, you can't buy a fully autonomous vehicle today. They have autonomous vehicles on the road. You have, you know, class 2 autonomous vehicles, etc. But the class 4 or class 5 autonomous vehicles, which would be vehicles that are able to operate without a human driver under all or most circumstances, are not currently available for sale. But that is about to change. Several of the world's leading car companies have announced that they will have, in the next 1 to 3 years, class 4 autonomous vehicles, and perhaps even class 5. So there will be autonomous vehicles on the road in the next couple of years. They're being road tested right now in the States and several cities. In Arizona, there are autonomous vehicles going around without drivers, you know, under testing conditions, and in other cities as well. So we think it's coming, and it's very interesting. It's a fundamental change, and it democratizes human transportation in our reckoning. First off, it will be much safer over time. Right now, there's about 34,000 deaths a year in the United States from automobile accidents. Many of them, most of them, due to driver error for one reason or another. And certainly they won't all go away, but the estimates are that up to 90% of those fatalities will be reduced with autonomous vehicles. So there'll be a huge positive impact on saving human lives over time with autonomous vehicles. But the other thing is it'll allow people to get from place to place that may not be able to drive for one reason or another because their vision or they're elderly or their physical state for one reason or another. And or for people that can't afford cars, it'll reduce the cost of them to be able to get rides. And then the other point that's really interesting in our reckoning is a fully autonomous vehicle is really an asset class. It's a novel sort of asset class addition because you can invest in acquiring the vehicle or partial ownership of it, and you could use it for your own transportation purposes, but also have it dispatched to join an Uber-like pool to generate revenue. And so we think there'll be pools of these autonomous vehicles that people will invest in. So it's a, you know, it's an interesting investment opportunity for individuals as well. It's definitely a step change.
Yeah, do you know what?
In human transportation.
Absolutely. I saw a video, I can't remember the guy, Tony Sieber, I think his name is, the guy did a presentation about the future of automobiles, and it's obviously fully automated. And he says, confirms everything you're saying here, that in the future, to have a sort of a car sitting there that costs $20,000-$30,000 and you use it only sort of 5% of the time, is ridiculous. It won't happen. You know, it's all down to money, and it will be autonomous, and like you say, you just call the car when you want a car, and that's it. So it sort of makes sense. And even though it seems far off now, it just makes financial sense, you know, absolutely financial sense. So anyway.
Well, companies have placed orders for autonomous vehicles. Yeah. You know, like Uber has placed an order with Volvo for autonomous vehicles. So it's not like it's something in the distant future. It's really in the next few years. It's very exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. One final thing, Cliff, in summary. Three reasons, if someone's listening to this, why they should add Tech Capital to their watch list on listening to the progress you're making here.
Okay. Well, I guess the underbelly of this whole business is based on the fact that the pace of innovation is accelerating. Things that used to take 20 years are now being done in a couple of years. And it's getting faster because the growth of knowledge is expanding exponentially. That creates wonderful opportunities, but also really big challenges for companies to keep up. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants a Kodak moment as a company right now. You know, you really want to be able to keep your finger on the pulse of new technologies. And I mean, autonomous vehicles are a perfect example. And ride-sharing services like Uber, which are worth more than, let's say, the top three car companies in the world put together, is another example. A transportation company that didn't exist 15 years ago. So you really have to keep your finger on the pace of innovation and sagaciously select those technologies that could help uplift your business and keep you in the running as the pace of innovation quickens. And so that's what we're addressing. And we think a lot of those innovations come from the brightest minds in the world, often who are at the leading research universities. So by having the largest global university network of universities in large and small countries worldwide, we feel we have the greatest selection of new technologies coming out of those institutions for companies to choose from and for us to cherry pick ourselves for our own portfolio. So that's reason number one. Size matters when it comes to finding new university discoveries, and we have the world's biggest network. And we also have more than 60 scientists to help screen the wheat from the chaff. In addition to that, we've built a technology transfer service business to help universities commercialize their discoveries. And that business, on average, is growing around 25% a year. And so that's really good because it allows us to reduce our operating expenses. And I think we have the lowest operating expenses of any company in our sector as a result. That's reason two. Reason three, we have a very capable management team that is knowledgeable in the technology commercialization space. And then last but certainly not least is we eat our own cooking. We've established a number of portfolio companies, four of which, Belloscura, Lucid, Solaris, and Guidant, all are, we think, remarkable companies with very capable staffs. Most of the senior staff members are expats from Fortune 500 companies. And they have great promise individually and collectively and great potential long-term value for our shareholders.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous stuff. Cliff, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch him again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Justin, and have a bang-up 2019.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Hayden Locke, Chief Executive Officer of Emerson EML, ticker there. Hayden, Happy New Year. Thanks for coming on.
Happy New Year, Justin. Good to be back.
Yeah, and you've released a corporate update, just summarising what's happening, what's to come, so we'll get into that in a bit. But as always, if someone's listening and not heard of the company, just summarise, what's Emerson all about, please?
Emerson's listed on the LSE as a standard list on the main board, and we're developing the outstanding Chemisette Potash project, which is located in northern Morocco. Last year, we delivered a scoping study which confirmed it has the potential to be among the lowest capital cost and highest margin potash projects in the world. And based on industry expert forecasts, it'll have an NPV 10 of over $1.1 billion. But more importantly, it'll generate significant and robust cash flows at a variety of potash prices. So a pretty exciting project that we're working on.
Yeah, and so you've got your RNS out here, corporate update, and you've got key work streams and news flow for 2019. So what can people expect?
That's right. We delivered the scoping study last year, which is a good first step. But really now we start to get into the more detailed work. So there's quite a lot already going on the ground. We've got drill rigs turning, doing infill drilling and some extensional drilling, which will upgrade and hopefully expand the mineral resources at Chemisette. That'll lead us to an upgraded JORC-compliant mineral resource estimate at some point this year. We're in the planning process for the metallurgical testing. I'm hopeful that that will start in the next sort of couple of weeks, maybe a month. And that really will confirm the process flow sheet for the pre-feasibility study. Again, that will be finished this year, so we'll be able to deliver that piece of news flow. We'll commence the pre-feasibility study. We're already in the planning process for that. We've had our first couple of meetings with our internal engineers. Other things that we'll be doing as well, we'll be commencing the environmental and social impact assessment, which leads us into the mine permitting process. So it's really starting that permitting process early because we're very confident that this is going to be a mine. And then the bigger things, I think, from a strategic perspective are who are we going to sell to and how are we going to finance this mine? So we'll be starting some of the strategic discussions with offtake and sales and marketing partners, both in country but also out of country as well. So really a big year of news flow for us. 2019 is going to be a lot of high impact, huge de-risking milestones for the company.
Yeah, and so what would you say is the next sort of big milestone?
Probably the biggest milestone upcoming next will be the finalisation of the metallurgical test work program. But in terms of the news flow in the next couple of weeks, we are drilling at the moment. There's assays that are pending, so hopefully those will come back in the next couple of weeks, and then we'll release those to the market as soon as we have them.
Marvellous stuff. Well, Hayden, you know the score here. If someone's listening right now, likes the sound of the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
The Chemisette project is among the lowest capital cost and highest margin potash projects in the world. Emerson is exceptionally well funded with over £3.4 million to accelerate the technical work to de-risk the Chemisette potash project and move it towards production. And 2019 is poised to be a huge year for us with multiple significant de-risking milestones, which will result in really high impact news flow for shareholders.
Marvellous stuff. And like I said, lots of things going on. So no doubt we'll be catching up again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much, Hayden.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communication. You're right, Al.
Yeah, wish this weather to cheer up, Just, but I'm okay. All good here. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. I mean, I'm sort of looking forward to getting, you know, this deal out the way, this vote out the way, so we can move on with this Brexit.
I know.
You know,
yeah,
and the biggest issue is of anything, I think, is just the uncertainty. And I know it's been said several times. Either way, now I don't care. I just think either vote for the deal or don't, or do something.
Yep.
Move it on. Just move it on because it's been dragging for ages now. And I don't care. Even the only thing I'm worried about is at the moment is if he goes for a sort of another referendum, which will just kick the can down the road further.
A general
election, which would be even worse. I think if general election and Jeremy Corbyn is going to get in, I'm going fully to cash in my portfolio because I think that's the biggest threat to the economy. You know,
absolutely, he is the biggest threat. But I was astonished to see yesterday, and I note somebody on Twitter also made the same observation that apparently people have been losing sleep, they've been getting antidepressants because of Brexit, and I just think, for goodness sake, you know, get your life together, you know, or get a life indeed, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, what will be, okay, it's going to go one way or the other. Life will go on, you know, house prices may realign, the markets may correct, or they may move higher. In fact, I think either way, there'll probably be some sort of relief rally around this, because once it's sorted, there will be a sense of, thank God that's out of the way. Now we can plan forward, and there's some visibility going forward. So let's crack on with it. But
I think if they kick this deal out, it'll give her, hopefully, if she's not kicked out of Parliament, whoever it is, better bargaining power, you know, with the... Yeah. In fact, just out now, I've just retweeted something, look at this. I mean, Europe are not in a good place. They're not at all, you know, and so I think Brexit is another thorn in their side. And Germany just announced German economic growth cools in 2018, lowest rate for 5 years. This is their biggest economy. You know, that's the strongest economy.
That is the powerhouse of Europe, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, let's face it.
And it's in worse state than us. And I'm just saying, they've got Italy going on. They've got dissenters, left, right, and centre. You know, they've got to show a unified thing. So I just think, you know, any sort of bargaining power we can leverage here is good.
I do think as well, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, it's all the focus on, oh, the power of Europe, they're going to do all this. Actually, no, Europe is in a pretty awful state right now. You've got, the German economy, the powerhouse economy, is slowing down. Okay, arguably Italy and Spain are economic basket cases, so you know Portugal's not too far behind. But if as a result of this our economy suffers badly, it's going to massively impact on the European economy. The Europeans don't want that, and I think all of a sudden, perhaps a little too late, some of the ministers in the Brussels ivory tower are actually waking up to this fact, and they're starting to backpedal a bit. So yeah, I agree. I think if we get a no deal today, then and she can go back and renegotiate, and you know, if the leave date is pushed back a couple of months, okay, we'll create more uncertainty, but it gives us more bargaining power, and we actually get out with the deal that we should have, because you know they're doing as much trade with us as we're doing with them. You know, let's not forget that it's a two-way street here. So the last thing they need to do is to be instrumental in crashing the UK economy, and I don't think it'll happen. I think this is a giant game of brinkmanship, as I've always said.
Yeah, let's go from the macro. Let's dig into the micro, Al. What stocks are you looking at? What's the first one?
Okay, well, I've got some interesting ideas today. But first of all, I want to look at one that we spoke about.
And you know what? That's a good point. I've got to point that out. I often get someone have a go at me on Twitter, you know, saying, why do you have this company on your podcast or that company? And I think, listen, I always liken it to Dragon's Den. I just say, as a listener, you're sitting there, you are one of the dragons with money to invest, right? It's an idea. Someone stands in front of you, pitches you an idea. You have to do some research, or using the knowledge you have, you know, and it's completely up to you whether you decide it's a good idea or bad idea. It's not down to the information provider to tell you it's a good idea or bad idea. Of course they're going to tell you it's a good idea, you know. Maybe a bias, maybe have some kind of interest in the company, of course. But this is where you come in as a listener, where you say, okay, no, I don't like this, you know, doing some more research, don't like this, or I do. It's up to you. So, you know, we give you information, you do with it as you please. That's all. This is not investment advice, it's an idea. Anyway, go for it, Al.
That's it. That is exactly it. You know, we're trying to provide ideas. We're trying to sort of come up with ideas. Also, you know, given where we are right now, we both said that income is a way forward. And I've got an idea here that might sort of contribute towards that, or certainly sort of spark some thought. But first of all, going to look at tertiary minerals. TYM is the epic code. Now, people have I've had quite a few people sort of contacting me on Twitter since the announcement yesterday about the Stormer mining application, but I think there's firstly a cool rational coal tail approach is required here, but secondly I think it also raises some serious questions about the Swedish government and the Swedish mining inspectorate, whether they're actually interested in bringing investment into the country. First of all, the company. So Tertiary Minerals are the only UK listed AIM-listed fluorspar company. What is fluorspar? Fluorspar is classed as a critical mineral by the EU, and it's used in a multitude of applications, including smelting, including optics, defence, a whole raft of applications. Tertiary Minerals has three major assets in in Influspar. It has the Storuman asset in Sweden, of which there's a 27.7 million tons JORC estimate of resource. The Lassedalen resource in Norway, which is a small asset of 4 million tons. The biggest one of the lot, which dwarfs the rest, is the MB project in Nevada, which is rated at around 80 million tons. Now, currently with Fluorspar, there has been there's been a spike in the price over the past year. The reason is that China, which is the biggest consumer, a number of its Fluorspar mines have been shut down because the mining practices are unsafe, and China is getting its corporate house in order and is looking at how these mines have been run. And indeed, this has been quite an issue, and it's caused the price to spike from around $300 a ton to between $550 and $580 a ton. So this is at a premium. Now, Tertiary Minerals owns these assets. The Storuman asset represents 24% of the total asset base of the company. So yeah, it's a significant amount, but not a deal breaking amount in my book. The share price for Tertiary has been as high as getting on for 2p. It's now currently 0.35p, and it fell rapidly yesterday after the announcement from the Swedish Mining Inspectorate that it had reviewed the application for mining in Storuman, and it had come to the conclusion that the reindeer herd is in the area, or the livelihood and the natural environment in which the reindeer exists would be too badly affected. And this is despite Tertiary going back to the mining inspectorate and addressing the issue and coming up with a number of solutions. Its lawyers have advised it to appeal, and Tertiary will appeal. But in my opinion, given the value of the asset Tertiary owns, there has been a massively disproportionate sell-off in this stock anyway prior to this happening. Brokers a couple of years ago just looked at the assets as they stood and placed a value of between 9 and 10p on the stock. So clearly we are well underwater on that front at the moment. Added to which, over a year ago, and nothing has changed, a memorandum of understanding was put together between POSL, which are a commodity broker in Germany, and the MD, Michael Fanger, and Tertiary MD Richard Clemmy have worked together on the various projects over the years for a number of years, and POSL basically have agreed to buy 70% of the offtake from the mines owned by Tertiary once they come to market, and it's also agreed to supply to provide finance to help get those mines up and running. Now, this hasn't happened yet, but my guess is that with the movement in the Fluorspar price, then there could be some developments in this area. But clearly, that's my speculation. That's my thought on the subject. It's not fact, so please do your own research. But in any event, the market cap of Tertiary Minerals now is less than a million, and with these assets in the ground and a valuation many, many times in excess of this, it's got to come out of the ground. But I think there's been a disproportionate sell-off here, and at these levels, Tertiary does represent a great long-term investment.
Well, as I say, it's an idea.
Yeah,
do you know what? It seems like the Swedish government are not going to budge on that reindeer thing, are they? Regardless of what you present to them, it just seems like I don't know whether they've actually read whether they've addressed the points previously that have risen. It seems like they just think, no, okay, we're not going to have a mine close to our reindeers. It seems like, doesn't it? You know.
Well, that's just maybe. Then they need to look at. Then I think investors will need to consider whether it's worthwhile investing into mining projects in Sweden, because with this level of bureaucracy, there's a workaround to be done here. And it's okay. Reindeers are wonderful furry animals. You know, there's no doubt about it, and their environment should be preserved and they should be looked after. But But if there is a valuable asset in the ground that could bring that could add to the help the Swedish economy, create employment in the area, whilst addressing the environmental issues around the reindeer, then surely it shouldn't be dismissed out of hand. They should agree to work towards it to find a solution. And Tertiary, I know, has worked very hard to come up with a solution. But even having said that, the fact is that Storuman represents 24% of the total asset base of Tertiary. So the major one is MB Project in Nevada, and that's the one that's really pushing forward and moving forward. So it's certainly taken some short-term value off, but the sell-off in my book has been disproportionate. I will say here, I'm a shareholder in Tertiary and will remain so, but that's my opinion, and clearly you must do your own research.
Yeah, it just seems if they've addressed all the points, the concerns that the government had originally, and yet the government still come back and said no. And I think it's beyond that. It's beyond this point, isn't it? They obviously got the thinking, and you got a question: if they can live in harmony with this mine, you know, that's not producing anything ecologically bad, or dangerous towards the husbandry of this deer. And you think, what's going on here? Is there a higher sort of agenda going on there, if that's the case? But again, you've got to look at the proportion of, that valuation of that is given to that mine. I mean, it's not the biggest one they've got, is it? So, or the biggest asset, I mean. Anyway, what's next, fella?
Okay, this is a company I've done a bit of research on over the past little while, and there's a research note out this week from TS Capital on the company. The company's called Grand Vision Media Holdings. GVMH is the epic code, and GVMH is a company that's based in the UK, has offices in Hong Kong, and is providing 3D screens into cinema, foyers, shopping centres, and so on.
Where's it listed, Al? Where's it listed? I can't find the figure.
GVMH. It's listed on London Main Market.
I can't even find it. When did it list?
It actually did an RTO last year. It's if you go onto, well, I've got the chart on the Hargreaves Lansdown site in front of me here. So
I got it.
That's it. Okay, so GVMH have currently 180 screens around China. They have agreements with cinema groups around China, and there's this is a massive growing market, as you can imagine. The Chinese sort of take the cinema going very seriously. It's a big event, and they'll go along. The whole family will go along. And so when you walk into these huge foyers, then you've got these massive 3D screens. And I've seen these are glasses free 3D screens, and they're quite sort of engaging and quite alarming, actually, because some of the stuff does appear to be jumping out at you. So they have these screens. Each screen generates something like 5,000 to 6,000pounds sterling revenue. They've got 180 screens. They anticipate or the broker anticipates for 2019 full year that'll go up to 240 screens. But along with each package, they have an e-commerce angle and a digital marketing tool. So if a client comes on and advertises across this network, with your smartphone, you can go up the screen and you can capture a barcode or a key code and interact and provide your details directly through the screen. So there's a very strong interactive presence here. GVMH are looking to expand their holding in China, and they've got a footprint of about 5% across the cinema groups. Most recently, they announced a contract with the cinema group Dadi, or DADI is how the name is spelled, and that ups the 180 panels to just over 200 panels, 22 new cinema locations in the Dadi network. But Dadi has 470 cinemas across China, so presumably if they work well, then they will sort of expand that quite rapidly. So the company is at an interesting juncture. It's very bullish about the coming year. Daddy's, you know, is the first in what's expected to be a series of deals that will be announced through the year. The broker's got forecast EBITDA of just over £1 million for full year 2019, and based on an EBITDA EBITDA multiple of 22 times, that puts a valuation currently with at the current level of 25p per share. Now the shares are trading. It popped up last week on the news of Daddy of the Daddy contract. It's currently trading around 17p, but I think there's every expectation that this could move forward according to the number of deals that the company signs. But it's a new area. Also, the outdoor digital market's a huge market. Of course, it's dominated by the likes of JC Deco and others. But GVMH have a novel approach, and this fully interactive approach they have does put them in a new unique position. I think this is a really interesting growth prospect.
Yes, I was having issues there. I couldn't find them in Vox. But so when are they first? Well, they RTO'd in was it August last year? Was it? Oh no, half year. Where was it?
RTO'd in June last year. They raised £1 million last year. And the RTO'd in June, there's not been a great deal of news flow since then. But the company, after RTOing, it's developing its network, and you know, the cinema market in China is huge. But also, it's not just cinemas that they're looking at airports and the massive shopping malls and all the rest of it. So there are numerous opportunities for GVMH to grow its reach. And it's a simple model. You know, you've got roughly £5,000 to £6,000 sterling per screen generated, and that includes revenues generated through the digital network. So the more screens they add, the more revenues are going to come in. So it's a very simple model, and you know, the visibility is quite easy to understand.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous. All right, cool. What's next, Al?
Okay, we have a number of contributors on the Brand UK website, and one of our long-standing contributors, Ken Baksh, put up an idea last week for the oil company or the oil production company EnQuest, which is it's a UK-based company, operates mainly in the UK, and it's got a number of assets across the North Sea. December last year, the company issued a pretty bullish update, said 2018 production on target, and 2019 production was expected to be in the range of 63,000 to 70,000 barrels of oil per day. It's up about 20% on the midpoint last year. The acquisition of the Sullom Voe terminal in and the infrastructure was completed in December, and the rights issue then had also paid down some of the bank debt. So you could buy the stock, or Ken came up with the idea for corporate bonds. ENQ1 is the IPIC code for the corporate bonds, which are traded on the LSE. Currently at £80, the bond price is currently £80, but. There is tomorrow. There's a cash payment conditional determination date that will confirm that the coupon will be paid in cash with a record date at the end of January. So basically, if you buy these bonds, you can basically take advantage of the payout on the 15th of February, you know, on that basis at £80 with the coupon worth sort of about 4.5%. That's could be a decent income for you know, investing for less than a month. So clearly there's a risk of bonds, but I think, you know, given the bullish outlook from EnQuest, and you know, the fact the oil price looks to be fairly steady and stable, and the visibility looks reasonably good going forward, this could be a nice way to generate a cash income. And of course, if you hold this the bonds within a SIP, the capital gain, any capital gain that's made, and the coupon payments from that are a shelter from tax. So basically, it's a tax-free investment vehicle. And it just seems, you know, we're always talking about stocks, but here's another way to look at a stock, and to, you know, if you have this in the SIP, it's a tax-efficient way to do it.
Yeah, and of course, it's always nice to have a variety, diversity, lots of different investment
diversifications.
Ideas. That's it, Al.
But I think again, you know, the theme we've discussed the past couple of weeks just has been about income, and this is a great income vehicle. So you know, I'm certainly going to participate in this, and but what do I know? But you know, this is again, to go back to the beginning, another investment idea. If you want some income, this is one thing to look at.
Marvellous stuff. That's good stuff, Al. Thanks very much. Don't forget, everyone, just do your own research, just investment ideas, as we said at the start. And that's good. And we'll speak next week, Al.
Speak next week, Jess. Cheers.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At five, boohoo.com. Ticker there is boo. They've had a release out, haven't they? Today, I think I saw some news. I didn't see a trading update. They are down 6.5%. They've had a cracking rise over the last few years. That's Boohoo at five. At four, Botswana Diamonds, BOD. At three, Anglo African Oil and Gas, AAOG. At two, Red Emperor Resources, RMP. And number one, most followed company in the last 24 hours is Block Energy, and they had some encouraging initial results from the Norio field. So people are liking that. Let's see what the share price is doing here. It's done a little bit today. I think it was up yesterday quite a bit, wasn't it? They released that late in the afternoon. Okay, top five most liked RNSs. At five, it is Emerson. Corporate update. Of course, I had Hayden on the podcast. At four, Boohoo. Trading update. I do apologise for that. At three, Prospects Oil and Gas. Prelim production concession application approval. At two, Tulu Energy, recommencement of drilling and operational update. And number one, most liked RNS, it's the same news actually as Prospect Oil and Gas, which is production concession awarded at Podere Galini, or Galina, in Italy. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciato.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.